All right, hey guys, and welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode number 155. In this episode, we are waiting for what's her face? We didn't even talk about this. Usually, we do a whole thing where we decide which fake guest is coming, but we didn't do that today.
But the sound of an airplane crashing.
I want to pretend to be talking to Jamie Lee Curtis today because I've always had a thing for her. So we'll.
And I'm going to pretend to go along with that, like it was both of our ideas.
Yes, we're waiting for Jamie Lee Curtis to show up and talk about her role in the newest film that she's in called Knives Out. Yeah, this is not awkward at all. Before we get to all that, though, I want to remind you that Three Drinks In is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen. Please click subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @3DrinksInPod. That's at the number 3DrinksInPod. You can like us on Facebook, and you can email us at 3DrinksInPodcast@gmail.com. That's everything, right?
Yeah, sure.
Why not? Okay, roll it, boys. As if there's actually a band they're going to play. Yeah, the Santa thing is it's intense. So like you go in and there's the line, which is long. But like I said, for those of you who have just joined us, this is the Macy's Santa Claus. But yeah, so you wait online, then you go into the chamber, and there's like a bunch of different rooms. They're all about, I don't know, 15 by 15, and there's a little Santa's helper there who works the camera, and there's you can't see them. It's like a maze. So they bring you into one room, and then you kind of go around a corner, and you wait, and you go inside, and then there's Santa, and then there's the exit. So there's like 10 guys, I'm sure, all just kind of hanging out there. So you don't have to wait for one guy. That would be, you know, awful. But what's nice about it is like there's like a privacy feature to it. So like if your kid has a meltdown, it's not like in front of everybody, and you waited now for a couple of hours, and you're embarrassed and you're pissed off, you know. And if dad's gonna freak out because they didn't take enough pictures, then that happens in private too. And you know they do a nice job. They really do. It yeah. So could be good. Bigger, but
no. You know.
We'll see how long this whole thing lasts with you know. The way the retail business is going, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, anyway. But that's what I did today. But we were behind a group of four middle-aged Italian ladies. Uh-huh. And I'm thinking to myself, do you really need to be here? Like, I get it. You're in New York. It's exciting. It's Christmas.
But Buon Natale.
Yeah. I was just like, you know, we have kids that are trying to do this, you know, like the time we took Frank to see Mickey Mouse, and you know he was like starting to lose his mind because he saw Mickey Mouse and he wanted to get over there as fast as possible. And I just turned to the the four college kids ahead of me, going, "Can we just go ahead of you, please? Yeah. You don't really need to be here. There's plenty of places to drink over in the World Showcase. Just you know, move along." Hmm. And they were sweet. Well, they thought he was going to kill somebody because he was so pissed off. And then they didn't realize, they thought he was afraid of this. Mm. So they were like, who are these insane parents with this 7-year-old boy? Because he was so big. He was 2. And they were like, they thought we were like forcing him to see Mickey. And I'm holding him, you know, it's like holding a dolphin when they do that thing where they kind of like, you know, stand up on their tails. And he's just bucking and weaving and, you know, his snot's pouring out of his nose. And I'm like, guys, he's just really excited. I swear to God. And then, like, I let him go, like, of a half-dead fish. And he ran to Mickey Mouse and just gave him the biggest hug. The entire room stopped. And they were like, "Oh, it was it was actually really quite special. We were really happy that that happened." He's showing him the little button they give you, and it was it was magical. But yeah.
Oh, good.
Fun fact. Anyway, so yeah, that's what I did today.
Cool.
Yeah.
I didn't do that.
So. No. I would have seen you there.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Knives Out is a movie.
Yes, Knives Out is a movie that we saw.
And we definitely invited Jamie Lee Curtis to come on and talk about it, and we didn't hear back. So we assume that she'll be here just any minute now.
Mm.
That's an entirely plausible thing that could happen.
But in the meantime...
Correct,
she
sir.
Doesn't. So what'd you think of Knives Out?
Huh. What did I think of Knives Out? Well, I did one of those funny things at the end when they roll credits. I was like, directed by Rian Johnson.
I guess it's Ryan.
Ryan. Spell it right then. Rian Johnson. And I'm like, oh, okay. So that makes, I've seen three of his films. I've liked 66% of them. I think. But like I had such a bad taste in my mouth after the last Star Wars movie that I was thinking to myself, well, if I had known he had directed this, I would have been a little less eager to go.
Mm.
But I liked Looper, so there's that. I liked Knives Out. And I feel bad, and so I can't tell if I should feel bad about this or what, but like I got a text message in the middle of it, I think from you, and it was an important one, so that kind of distracted me. And then I realized that I had forgotten to do something at work, and I don't know why I felt the urge to like look. I was alone in the theater; it was just me. So I was on my phone taking notes on for parts of it, and then at some point, I think it was just before the car chase, I got distracted, and I can't tell, looking back on it, if the overall weight of the plot was just such that like the bottom fell out of it a little bit, and that's where I got confused and distracted, or if I, just got distracted independent of the film and should have been paying better attention because there was nothing really wrong with the film. It was just me. So that's the only thing I kind of quibble with. When we can get, and perhaps you can just, when you talk about it, from your point of view, you can fill me in. But like overall, I thought it was good. I really did. It was solidly directed. It was pretty well acted. It had a giant cast of people. I mean, my God, could you get more of them in the same room at the same time? They even found Don Johnson someplace. My God.
Yeah, it's not like he was busy.
No, but he was missing. that counts. But yeah, like everybody in it except the main character, so far as I could tell, was a somebody for the most part. I mean, Christopher Plummer, for crying out loud. Mm. But yeah, it was an old fashioned whodunit, but it had an interesting twist that I liked. Kind of felt like parts of it dragged, but I couldn't tell if that was just my, losing expectations and or losing concentration rather. It was good. It was funny. It was clever at times. Yeah. What'd you think?
Yeah, it was good. I saw friends over the weekend and he'd had more than three drinks and he was like screaming at the top of his lungs. Like it was a good time at the movies. I didn't love it. It wasn't a life-changing event. It was just good. I was like nodding along like, yeah, that's right. It was good. It wasn't the greatest movie I've ever seen. But if you're looking to kill 2 hours and have fun, no, that's what you go to the movies for. So, the acting was all good. The music was good. Rian Johnson is a good director.
He is a good director.
Whether you like The Last Jedi or not, it was made well.
Yeah, and I actually think that most of the problems of that movie, I'm sure he, you know, he bears a lot of responsibility for some of the weirdo, stupid things like the helmet smashing and like, you know. But that's a movie built by committee. It's not a movie made by a, you know. It's one thing to have a movie made with a small number of people in charge of it, but that was like, you know, 80 people, you know, made that movie, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah, you're not going into that one cold. Like, he had pieces that he had to work with, and he did what he wanted with them. So that's different than this, where it's like, I'm just going to rip off Sherlock Holmes and Agatha Christie and do it my way, you know, which is fine.
Yeah.
So I think it thinks it's cleverer than it is, which is fine.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Like, I was always waiting for the last big twist that never came, because I kind of went into it, and I usually don't do this. So I was like, I'm going to solve this thing before it's over. Like, I never do that. I usually just sit back and watch him and go like, oh, wow, I never saw that coming. But I knew it was a murder mystery whodunit. And it, like, from the minutes, I was like, I'm going to solve it first. And I did. And I'm not very good at that. So, you know, it wasn't as twisted as it thought it was.
No, I think you're definitely right that it was more... Yeah, it thought it was more clever than it actually was, and that's not like,
it's not a knock. It's just
the
way the plot was structured.
Yeah, and I'm not that kind of guy that, like, I deliberately try to avoid doing that with movies. Like, my wife does that instinctively.
Right, I was thinking of her the whole time.
You know,
look, I never do that, so maybe I'll try it this time and see what it's like. And the whole time, I'm like, I was practically taking notes, like, okay, where was she when this happened?
Yeah. So. I liked the cleverness of like just how they did it differently, you know? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. What was that? Just the fact that you basically figure out the murder bit of it pretty quick, like how the guy actually died.
Mm-hmm.
And like the fact that it really became a different kind of story after the fact, but still retained some sort of elements of the murder mystery to it. You know, once it, you know, it began to get more complicated, and people began to, you know, also like the woman who dies in the former laundromat kind of thing, and like once like the stakes began to get raised, it was like, okay, well, there's still a story here. It isn't like they've dropped the ball completely, but it was a nice subversion of expectations of, like, it's a simple, like, you know, guy found dead in his house during a party, and, you know, who's here, who's not there, and who could have done it, and that kind of thing. And, you know, the fact that they did that about a third of the way into the movie, it was like, oh, so this is not quite what we're going to end up watching, is it? It's going to be something a little bit different.
Yeah. I thought that because I was waiting for the big twist, so there's usually always like a big, like, gasping moment that doesn't happen in this. And I kept thinking it was going to, because the only real big problem I had was with the main character, Marta. She's the nurse.
Mm.
Her gimmick is that she can't lie. It causes her to throw up. And she's such a nice person that she almost never lies. And that's really stupid. People don't have that problem. So, like, for so much of it, I was like, when are we going to get that reveal that she's not really barfing, like, because she can't lie? So you just kept waiting and waiting, and it never happens. She's just a really nice person who never lies. So, like, at the end, I was like, huh, that's it. She really can't lie because she'll throw up everywhere. That's a little odd.
It's odd, but it was a fun plot device. Like, you're
fun?
Right. Yeah, no, I thought it was fun. It was a, you know, it's not a real thing that people, so far as I know. I mean, look, it's possible that people do have sort of physiological responses to certain behavioral trends, like, you know, if you do this, you get sick. You know, I mean, it people can become physically ill because of hearing information or saying things. Like, people all the time, like, when they find out something, you know, usually it accompanies some kind of a tragedy, like somebody dies, and you're just so overwhelmed that you can't, you know, you get ill.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, it's not that far off from a real thing. In this case, it's comical that, like, she'll say the sky is green and then puke. Like,
right.
That, but, like, it becomes an interesting character trait that is used in a very... in an amusing context to move the story along, and, you know, to weed out certain decisions or, you know, aspects of what's happening. So if something happens and they ask her and she says no and then throws up, well, you know the answer is yes, and so you can use that for, you know, to move the plot, and also for just pure comedy, or for both at the end, you know, when she lies about this and holds it in long enough, and I could read 10 miles away, you know.
Well, that's the thing, like, because it's so ridiculous, you're expecting it to have some sort of twist, and that was the only thing. Like, if you said she was just not a liar, then you can kind of go, okay, maybe I can't really trust this character. But when you have something that's so absurd, and a lot of the movie is played for laughs, but that one really isn't realistic. You're like, all right, this has got to be like a thing, right? Like, I should pay attention to, and it just wasn't really. So
yeah, I guess I just kind of accepted that. I wasn't looking for it to be like the, you know, because there was going to be so much of that as it was, you know, like as they set everything up and everyone is lying, or, you know, like the first 20 minutes are phenomenal in the sense that the guy interviews all the different people in the family and they all tell different versions of the same event. And as you flash back and forth between them telling and then seeing it, it's always slightly different. So there was enough with them and the way in which that they were dysfunctional and couldn't relate to each other and couldn't be truthful with each other, that I had enough to kind of work with and try to keep track of who was lying about what and whose perspective was this or that. That I think adding one more of the big one, yeah, I guess it would have been. I'm not surprised you were looking for that to be a big change at the end. To go, oh, by the way, you don't really get sick. It's just you're making yourself do it because of this or that, and you're actually an evil person. But it was no. I mean, I actually think that was kind of deliberate. From a political point of view, it's like the first thing you see. I mean, I walked in like a minute late, but like the first thing I saw was that she's driving up to the house and she's crying, and somebody, like a cop or someone, stops her and says, "Are you the help?" And the granddaughter was gets all in, you know, like, you know, Sarah Lawrence indignant and says, you know, "How dare you?" And she's part of the family and. Blah blah blah, and like there was no way that they were gonna make the undocumented immigrant, or the, you know, like she's a dreamer basically, if you want to look at it in terms of politics. Her mother came here illegally and has been living here for years, and she was born here or brought when she was a kid, whatever. But like, there's no way they're gonna make her the bad guy. That would have been the real subversion of expectations for me, was that these Hollywood types would take a character like her who was so decent and also politically and sociologically innocent and, you know, virtuous, that to take that and say, oh no, she's really the bad guy, or she was really in on it somehow, or it's like the double cross. Like, there was no way that was going to happen. So. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I felt they dealt with her extremely straightforwardly, because
well, yeah. That's what happened. Yeah,
yeah. But that's like that's a deliberate choice that extends, I think, beyond, you know, the film. It's like there's politics involved with that. There was no way that they were going to make that person untrustworthy at some point. Mm-hmm. So, but what did you think of Daniel Craig?
He was good. I mean, he was in Logan Lucky doing a Southern accent too. And that was the same kind of, you know, over the top jokey thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a riff on Agatha Christie and her character. Hercules Poirot.
Hercule Poirot.
Hercule Poirot. And with the giant mustache and everything, you know, it's like an homage to that. So I knew not to take that overly seriously. You know, it's like, really? Like, does it really sound like that? But it's part of the gag. So you sort of like, he's a good actor. So
Poirot was extremely serious. I mean, like, he was so serious that the last time he was portrayed on film, he was Kenneth Branagh, for Christ's sakes.
I know, but you can't help but laugh at him. The joke is on him. In this movie, the joke's on everybody. In that, like, we all know how ridiculous this is. Whereas Poirot takes himself too seriously, they're all kind of laughing at him.
I guess. I mean, I haven't seen the Orient Express movie, or and I haven't read the books. I read.
Oh, they're awful.
No, I didn't. They were bad. What did I read? Ten Little Indians, which was not a Poirot book at all. But I mean, here I couldn't tell at times. First, I want to know if that accent was good or not. I got hooked into watching these YouTube videos by a guy it's a series that Wired puts out, where this dialect coach for film, can't think of his name, goes over it's like there's like four or five videos where he does like 28 characters each. So it's like 100 and some odd actors and going over their accents for various roles. And I find that stuff really interesting because I've got a speech impediment, and there are just things that that this guy explains that I've always just been curious about how, you know, the mouth moves and how you make different sounds doing it. And so to me, it's interesting to see him critique different accents and, like, you know, how to tell when people slip up. And I'd be very curious to see how he would rate Daniel Craig's American accents, because I've seen him do Chicago in a play. He was a cop from Chicago. I heard that. Then there was Logan Lucky, and now this. He seems determined, God love him, to want to do things where he doesn't sound like himself at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think because he's trying to debond himself a bit, which is smart to make movies while you're also making Bond movies. So you can, so like when you're done, you can have a career.
Well, this just felt like, okay, do Southern accent. Okay, now do cartoon Southern accent. And he did it, and it sounds fine.
Yeah.
Because it definitely sounds cartoonish.
Yeah, it's not J.W. Pepper, but, you know, it was a little over the top, but it could still have been actually pretty close to accurate. I don't know. I mean, there's so many different Southern accents. It's not just one. There's like, I don't know, 40.
Right. Well, this seems like, do the one people outside of America think it sounds like. You know, like, yeah. Like, you're right. There's different kinds of accents, but this one felt like, what do you think Southern people sound like? And he's just doing that.
I mean, I think
you know, that's a choice.
I think it's supposed to be Louisiana. Cause what's his name? Benoit Blanc.
Benoit Blanc.
Yeah, which is a great name. But that's very French. So, yeah. You know, something, you know, I think from... So there's a kind of a Cajun aspect to it that I don't know. I was kind of expecting him to not be that. So I don't know. Was I disappointed that he's... that? I don't know. I kind of want him to be him sometimes. Because he's got such a great voice. And he's so serious. And he's... begins the movie very serious, kind of hanging out in the back playing the piano key, which was like a cool little scene. But no, he was good. I thought he's a little bit over the. And there were times where he appeared to be a genius, and times where he appeared to be bumbling.
Yeah, that I didn't understand.
Yeah, so like in the car with the headphones on, like.
Yeah, because they talk about him like he's some genius, especially in the beginning, they set it up like, well, the great Benoit Blanc comes to my town asking to help me out. How can I refuse? And then as you watch it, you're like, well, I'd refuse. This guy's a moron.
Yeah.
You know?
He just seemed to be like his amazing powers of deduction were intermittently, you know, overshadowed by his goofiness. You know, like he was right. Never wrong. Per se, and you could always see how he was paying attention to things, but then like he wouldn't be. You're like, well, what the hell?
Well, it's not that he was wrong. He was just like suddenly he would just miss something that was obvious that you were playing for laughs. You know, like when the dog keeps bringing that piece of debris, and he just like isn't looking, and you're like, well, does he not hear the dog? I mean, those dogs were huge, so it just was silly, you know.
Yeah,
the tone was a little all over the place with him.
Yeah. And then the other one, what's his face? Chris Evans, right?
That's Captain America?
Captain America.
Well, I kept thinking, why is Captain America wearing that sweater? He's really mean.
It's Massachusetts. It's what they wear.
Yeah, I realized they were supposed to be outside of Boston or something.
But, like, again, somebody else who's determined to make movies in as much contrast to the kind of roles that he's been playing, you know.
Yeah, he reminds me of Josh Radnor, who played Ted on How I Met Your Mother, in that, you know, fairly young, straight white men who are very in touch with being actors and their emotions and how they're presenting themselves to the universe. So like every interview I've ever heard with Chris Evans is the same sort of thing where it's like, I wasn't comfortable being Captain America and I realize what an honor it is and a responsibility. And I don't want to be stuck doing this, not because I don't want to be typecast, but because like I need to grow and what kind of example am I setting and this and that. And you're like, oh man, I don't know, man. Just relax. Just relax. And same with Josh Radnor. Where it's just like, you need to relax. It's just a job.
Well, yeah, but I think Josh Radnor is also like a lot less talented than Chris Evans.
Yeah, but their mindset is the same.
Yeah, they have sort of like that douchey drama kid vibe to them.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to say it that way, but it's probably true.
Yeah, it's essentially what we're talking about here. Yeah, no, I mean, I think he's a better actor. I think he's, you know, he's been luckier. He makes better choices.
He's in phenomenal shape.
He's in really good shape. I'm looking over some of his, like, so like Snowpiercer was supposed to be a pretty good movie. It's got a lot of buzz, but like, he's been careful not to do too much like bad shit. He's been very selective, and like I think he's going to make a point now that, you know, that he's out of the Marvel thing, that he'll be very selective about the kind of movies he does to do this exact type of thing, to come across as not Captain America. But yeah, he does have a bit of that vibe where he's, you know, high school drama teachering in it all over the place. I mean, but like you got to think about too. Like, I'm watching Captain America the first movie, like kind of intermittently at home now, and you think about, this is the kid who was in fucking the Fantastic Four. He was the Human Torch in that movie, and it was terrible.
Yeah, I always think of him in Not Another Teen Movie.
Oh, God.
He's like the jerk guy that learns a lesson character, you know?
Yeah.
He was great in that, too.
Yeah, I think he's probably better when he's funnier.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have a lot of opportunities to be funny, but like him and Chris Hemsworth, who is a legitimate, you know, comic talent, he's like, it's one of those things where the actor really drove the writing, kind of like we saw like in Star Trek when we were, you know, we'd see see interviews with some of the characters from those shows, and how the character would change based on the writers getting to know the actor better. And I think that's what happened with Thor. Was like he was so Shakespearean in Thor the first go around. It was, you know, ultra dramatic. I remember the scenes when they you know, like for the trailer when they had him like trapped in that room with Agent Coulson, and they can't pick up the hammer, and there's this whole thing, and
Kenneth Branagh,
yeah, exactly. And then over time they're like, well, he's making other films and he's being very funny, why don't we just make Thor funny? No one's gonna hate that, right? And they were like, no, and they were right. Like, which is, it's kind of the, like one of the nice things you can do when you have such a sprawling multi-film universe is to be like, we're just going to change this character dramatically, and because it's better, nobody will mind. Right, guys? And everyone's going to nod their head like, yes.
And nobody cared.
So, but he was good, although I thought he could have been funnier at times. Like, the ending was funny, I thought, with him, but that's sort of it. But yeah.
Yeah, he's good. I mean, spoiler alert, did you figure out he was the bad guy at all?
No. And that's where I sort of got off track. And I think that this is the kind of movie that there's so much going on and it sort of groans under the weight of everything that I couldn't put it together like that. So how did you figure it out? Because this is where I wanted to see if I really should have been paying more attention, or if it was not my fault but that of the film.
Yeah, it's set up more obvious that he's a bad guy. He's the one everybody hates. You know, he didn't go to the funeral and this and that. I mean, I only sort of figured it out. I missed a couple of things because it was like, all right, I didn't realize he was switching all the medications around and yada yada. But like he was always missing at certain parts when they were like, well, who else could it have been? And some of the characters are in certain rooms or they're doing certain things that it might have been them. But then you realize like he was completely unaccounted for. And there's one clue when it happens in the beginning where the dogs are barking at him. And then they either bark before or after at someone you can't see. And they're the only ones they do that for. So I was like, oh, it was obviously him sneaking in and things like that. So like the little clues started adding up. Like the way these murder mystery in any kind of cop show, they have to give you information. And so if you watch enough, like if you watch enough Law and Order or whatever, you kind of figure out, okay, this is the stuff they're giving me that are clues. And his was the only one that had enough clues in it that could be plausible. Which is why I always hated, what was that show? Oh, NCIS.
I was just going to say, yeah, because they didn't do that.
Because they didn't do that. Like, the culprit was always someone you didn't notice or didn't see. And then you feel cheated. And you're like, well, because you want to be in on the game. It's a game.
Yeah.
You know, the best murder mysteries involve the audience. And so if you're not part of it, if you don't get a fair shot, you feel cheated, no matter how well complicated and complex the plot is. So in this one, it was like, It's trying to be clever than it is, because there's no big twist and they're not giving you enough red herrings, especially with a girl who cannot lie.
Yeah.
So like when she tells you of what happened, she confesses halfway through, you're just waiting to fill in gaps. And his was the only ones that had any gaps you could fill, because all the other characters were accounted for. So like, did I realize like the extent of all of his machinations? No, but I was like, oh, it's him. Of course it's him. It couldn't be anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true. Like, the fact that he was simply not there for most of the time,
right?
You know, made it kind of obvious if you think about it that way. I mean, the one, I guess, big clue that you probably, I probably should have picked up on was the decrepit grandmother who, you know, who's sitting at the window and scares the crap out of the girl coming down. She says, "Ransom, are you back again?"
Right.
But you don't know if she's just insane or blind or whatever. And I had thought that, like, what they were going to show you was, in fact, she was staring at somebody behind her. Like, there was a reflection in the which would have made sense in that, like, if you're outside of a window like that and the person inside is in a fairly lit, well-lit room.
Yeah, they can't see you.
You can't see outside very well. So I was kind of expecting something to come of that, but no, it was simply that he had been there before doing the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I don't know. So I guess the part that where I get confused is like, so somebody sends her half of a photocopy of something that's, you know, where it's actually the fact that the tox screen came back negative. He hadn't been doused with the morphine. And so it was that bit where I was really sort of confused.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So the actual help.
Fran, right? It was Fran?
Yeah, the white woman, like the she was like the housemaid or something.
Yeah.
She knew it was him, and she mailed all that stuff to him. And to make it look like it was Marta, he sent it to Marta after he got it.
Oh, so she was blackmailing him?
Yeah, she was going to blackmail him or, like, expose him.
Yeah.
And so he had to keep it on the nurse and cut the housemaid out. So he, like, took everything and sent it to her. It all hinged on whether she switched the bottles of morphine around.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way the will said, either she can get it or she can't. Depending on how he physically died. Did he kill himself because he was going to die, or did he just kill himself?
Yeah.
Like if she had screwed that up. So he kept going back and forth because he wasn't sure. And then at the end, he thought that she had actually poisoned him by mistake. And so that was the whole thing. Like, I have to make it so that she thinks that she actually poisoned him when she really didn't.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, that's complicated. It's not really complex. Like, it's just like, you know, like keeping the shell game within, you know, where's the shell in the cup? like, okay.
Right. So,
and normally I would have zoned out myself, but I was like really trying to figure it out. So
yeah,
I was trying to keep it all straight.
So the ironic bit is that he switches the medication in the vials to basically frame Marta for the, so effectively killing his grandfather by switching the medications in the vials. She doesn't give him the wrong one because
she knew the difference instinctively.
Right. She's such a good nurse, and she didn't have to pay attention to the label. She could just see that the morphine was different than the other one. So he had planned to kill the grandfather anyway, and blame it on the nurse.
Right.
Fran, how did she find out about that?
She saw him messing with the bag.
Right. So while they were at the funeral, she wasn't, and he wasn't either, and he was fiddling with it. So then she gets the tox report from the coroner and mails it to him.
Right. She didn't understand what the tox report meant. She just assumed that he poisoned her. She just assumed he poisoned the grandpa.
Uh-huh.
And then he realized that he didn't. So he was like, oh my God, my grandfather slit his own throat for no reason. And since the tox report will say that, the maid will get all the money. Like, the nurse will get all the money because she's in the will.
Oh, so she's not so much sending him the tox report to say that, you know, you did this, but hey, say that you didn't get away with the thing you wanted to get away with, and in fact, you caused him to kill himself. Whew.
Yeah.
And then there just didn't seem to be a lot of time for all of that to happen. You know, like, it just seemed like, I get it, so he leaves the party, comes right back up the trellis into the thing, switches the vials, like, it just seemed rather complicated and difficult to pull off in a short period of time. You know, like,
well, that's so, murder mystery for you.
I guess it just seemed like, you know, but he finds out at like 8 o'clock, you're getting not a red cent. And so, you know, he storms off and leaves and hatches this ridiculously complicated plan.
Well, I think the plan was simple in that I'm going to switch the vials or something, because he died that night.
Right. It just seems like that, like I would never have thought of that in that length of time and then be able to execute the same thing. So, yeah, it's a movie, but I'm just like, that was, yeah, you know, I was, and then the whole thing when Fran is sending him things back and forth, and then he sends the money to Blanc. And
well, time had gone by.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't clear as to how much time.
Yeah, at least a couple of weeks. Like when they first meet Daniel Craig, it's been a week. When they're saying, like, why are we being questioned again?
Mm.
And they're like, this guy's here now because someone sent him money, so...
Okay, yeah, there's just a lot of information, and it's a very short movie for the amount of info in it. It's only 2 hours long.
Yeah, well, that's a credit to Rian Johnson in that it's hard to make these talky movies interesting.
Yeah.
Because I watched that Murder on the Orient Express with Kenneth Branagh, and it's not interesting. like you have to make people explaining what they did visually exciting. So they, like, you have to almost have to do like the flashbacks, and if you're good at it, you show them from different points of view, and like things are slightly different each time, and like that's a skill. I mean, that's hard to do. I mean, the first half an hour is them sitting in front of the chair just talking. You know, it's easy to make that boring.
Yeah, I mean, the backdrop helped. You know, the set decoration was phenomenal.
Yeah, the set was good. The music was good. There were jokes sprinkled throughout, so you didn't lose interest.
The masturbating neo-Nazi, I thought was great.
I mean, look at the guy. He lives in like a clue board. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. That was funny. But and then did you catch who played the lawyer?
Yeah.
Frank Oz, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Frank Oz, like, for no reason.
Yeah, I was just kind of like, wait, is that Frank Oz? I actually just watched something with the Muppets the other day, because Carol Spinney just died. I don't know if you know.
Yeah,
Big Bird. That. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Oscar the Grouch.
Was he? He was both?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I guess that's true. And like my brain's been so wired into all these different voices, watching all these Wired videos about this accent coach, and the guys doing Bert and Ernie, who were Frank Oz and Jim Henson, and it's funny, like, hearing them, they're doing pretty good impersonations of Bert and Ernie, but they're only hitting it really well on certain lines or certain words, where like. They'll be talking and it just doesn't quite sound right, and then they'll say like one word and it'll be exactly right, and you go, oh, there it is, like you just kind of hit it. And something about that is, like, you know, it's oddly frustrating, because like you want it to be since the show hasn't changed all that much in the last 4 years, that you kind of figure that these characters are timeless, but they're not. The actors who play them die and get replaced all the time. The only one I can't tell the difference is Elmo.
Yeah.
The guy doing Elmo now is perfect, which is a shame, because the other guy doing Elmo, I was left unceremoniously. That was stupid.
Yeah, well, they just got rid of the guy who does Kermit recently.
Yeah.
Apparently he was a nightmare to work with. He was older. He'd been doing it for years after Jim Henson died. And they unceremoniously dumped him. And I haven't done any Muppet stuff recently, except they're hawking this stupid thing, like video face chat from Facebook.
Hmm?
They're doing all these commercials.
Oh, yes. The portal.
And the guy doing Kermit sounds horrible. Like, it's like extremely noticeable that he sounds a little different.
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
I was showing my wife, you know, the Family Guy with the wrong sounding Muppets. Yay.
And now we have wrong sounding Muppets.
Yeah, and that's literally how it sounds. It's like, oh yeah, that guy sounds just wrong. Like, that's just not the right voice.
I think the guy doing Cookie Monster actually is improving the character a lot, because before he was a very straightforward kind of like just kind of grunted and ate cookies, and but now they have him doing all kinds of goofy like satire, and not satire, but like parodies and things that it's I don't know, it's really really funny.
Mm. You know. So would you watch another film with Benoit Blanc?
I would. I like that idea too, that they would like, this is like a new franchise for Daniel Craig to be involved with. And I think this is a genre that doesn't get enough play, because it's like they're usually, if they're done well, they're great. And you know, you were saying before about your drunk friend going on about how it was a good time at the movies, and you know, we talk about every so often the fact that we don't get enough non-superhero movies, and that's a shame, and it is a shame, and everyone's been saying the same goddamn thing for so long, you know, whenever they go see a non-superhero-related movie. But I think what's like the worst part about the superhero thing is that there's no such thing as like just going to the movies to be entertained. Everything has to be a pretty big event. And these don't, like, you don't have to have that per se. Like, this is just like, you know, if you go to the movies once a week, like we try and do, it's just a good way to spend a couple of hours. It's fun. It gets you out of the house. It's entertaining. It doesn't have to be like a thing where you book your ticket a week or two ahead of time, you pick your seat, you know, you strap the stadium pal to your legs so you don't have to get up to go to the bathroom, because you're going to be there for 3.5 hours. You know, like, I want to watch The Irishman, but I don't, like, I'm so glad that somebody came up with, like, a way to do it in 3 nights so I don't have to watch the whole thing in one sitting.
Yeah. Like,
not everything has to be an event. Sometimes I just want to go to the movies, for Christ's sakes, you know?
I mean, they've done a lot of these movies. It's just they've been on, it's like the Western. Like, they've been played out, so they don't do them really much anymore. And you get a million of these things. You can watch a police procedural any hour of the day. It's just, do you want, like, an interesting one, or you just want to solve a mystery?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if it's done well, and I think that Daniel Craig tends to make pretty good choices in the kind of projects he works on. So I would trust him to be like, you know, I will do this, and it, you know, like, it's got to be good. It can't be shit, guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, for that reason, I would go see more with him if they get, you know. And again, like, you're right, like, things get played out, but then they kind of come back again. Like, we're seeing more and more Westerns now under the guise of something else. Like, The Mandalorian is a Western. Logan was a Western. Like, they just get rid of all the goofy hats and the six shooters, and I think you can tell the same kind of stories that those movies made popular, without sort of the ensembles that would distract you from what you're supposed to be watching. So, yeah, I think that things are cyclical in that nature. Like, we haven't had a bunch of murder mysteries for a while. This is maybe, we know, it's we're due for a few more. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea of the reoccurring character in the anthology type of a setting, where like it's an entirely different, you know, thing he has to solve this time, you know, versus last time. Even though that the structure is kind of the same, but the you know, the characters are all different, the setting is different. It's not like a true sequel.
So. Yeah, well, I mean, you can only do so many before you get tired of it, because the guy solving the mysteries doesn't change. He's the same.
Right.
And that's why these things have a very limited shelf life, unless you're, like, I can't watch Law and Order and stuff like that. Because you're, and my, you know, I've had other people tell me this, professors and acting teachers and things. And it's like, you're just spewing dialogue like a machine. You're not acting. Every so often you have to cry. Okay. but you're not doing anything. Like, they're not characters. That's why you could do that show for 20, 30 years, because it's just a plot-generating device. It's nothing. And I was watching one recently, you know, SVU, like, whatever friggin' season they're on, 20, 22, I don't know. And I wanted to jab my eyes out. I was like, this is awful. How can anyone watch this? Because it's everyone with a furrowed brow, looking very concerned. Ice-T comes in for his paycheck every so often. Yo! And then it's just like, you're just spewing what the law is. I'm like, I don't want to read a law textbook.
Yeah, they've jumped the shark now for quite some time.
Well, it's the same with, you know, I mean, Sherlock was pretty much the same. So was Hercules Poirot. You know, I'm really smart and I'm going to get you. And it's just, you're just waiting for them to figure it out. It's interesting when it's Sherlock and then everybody else is just a pale imitation, especially after 40, 50 novels, books, whatever. So it's like, I like this. This was good. Knives Out. I'd watch another one. Would I watch 30 of them? No.
No. No. So. Two more. Let's do two more.
Yeah, like, and that's
then,
okay.
Then we'll take a break.
Right.
So, anyway, this is a we'd recommend this one.
Yeah, if you're looking for something that's not a superhero movie or a horror film, seem to be a lot of it Christmas time these days. Yeah, you know, of course. Go see this.
Fa-la la la la.
La la Black Christmas or Krampus or whatever.
Yeah.
Santa's sleigh. Starring James Caan.
That's true. I forgot about that.
Well, starring might be a stretch.
Yeah. Well, I guess Jamie Lee Curtis isn't coming.
No.
Sorry, guys. She was good. She was good. She's always good. She's always good. Seriously.
Yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah. What can you say? Anyway, if you guys want to share with us what you thought of this movie on Instagram or Twitter, we are at @3drinksinpod on both. You can find us on Facebook. You can email us at threedrinksinpodcast@gmail.com. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Just click subscribe and tell all your friends. Leave reviews, please. That's it, right?
Yeah, that's it.
All right. As always, please drink responsibly, and we'll talk to you all next time.
Take care.
Adios.